This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
When we think of the corporate world, we often refer to it as a rat race, which removes a lot of emotional connection from what the corporate world is. But it turns out that leaders actually underestimate the contribution that emotions can have on a person's decisions and commitments. You are listening to Raise Your Game on Enterprise. I'm Christine Wong, and this is the third and last part in the series all about how leadership is actually a losing game. And again, I'm here with Joseph Tan, who is the consulting director of Good Monday Consulting. He's here in the studio with us for a third time to share how leaders can become better leaders by losing the emotional game. So the previous two episodes, I guess, of the series were about losing the ego game and losing the expectations game. Thank you so much, Joseph, for coming into the studio.
Sure. Good to be back.
All right. Well, let's kind of start off with a few statistics, because statistics are always really fun. There is actually a Gallup report that says that logic contributes only 30% of influence on a person's decision-making process, which means, logically, that emotions contribute around 70% of influence on how we make decisions. So why are we so controlled by our emotions?
I think that's how we are wired, because we are more than just a physical mass. We are just not a body. You know, we've got a mind, we've got our spirit. But if we just take a look at logic alone, we discount the well-being and the invisible factors that make up the inspirational part of an employee. Unfortunately, if you take a look at the definition of the word employee in Malay, one of the Malay words for employee is kaki tangan.
Mm.
That is the problem.
Yeah.
A lot of people, when they come to work, only their kaki tangan appears. Only the hands and feet appear. That's what kaki tangan means.
Yes.
But the hati and minda, the heart and mind, is somewhere else. The emotional state, well-being, is somewhere else.
Mm.
And when that happens, disengagement comes into the equation.
Actually, that's what I wanted to head over to next, because again, from Gallup, we've got a report from 2014 to 2016, and that says that 15% of employees worldwide are engaged in their work, and in Malaysia specifically...
Only 15% are engaged.
Yeah, and in Malaysia specifically, it's 19%, which is more, but that also means that 81% of employees in Malaysia are not engaged in their work. So really, what is that relationship between your emotions and your ability to engage in something?
Yeah, there are very many reasons that contribute to a state of disengagement. And I think because disengagement is an issue of the heart, I think the solution to engagement must also come from the heart. And that's what makes it so challenging, because whatever that contributes to engagement is largely invisible. However, most employers spend their time on what is visible. Things like
ROI,
giving you higher salary, you know, things like improving facilities, things like improving policies, things like coming up with branding, vision and mission. These are all very good visible stuff, but that contributes to less than half of what would engage an employee. So we need to focus on the invisible stuff.
Right. That's all kind of on the surface motivational things, where we need to really get into the depth of what really makes our employees tick, I suppose.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think that there is this kind of almost a stigma in a way, because when you think about a leader, you often don't think about them being emotional or being vulnerable to emotion, right? So what is it about being emotional and dealing with our emotions that makes leaders kind of shy away from wanting to use emotions as a leadership tool?
If you take a look, what is the number one invisible factor that leads to disengagement is the quality of my relationship with my direct supervisor. Now, when I say the quality of my relationship with my boss, with my direct supervisor, that doesn't mean that both of us are very emotionally connected in a way that I could cry on his shoulders. But it does mean that a leader must be authentic. I think as human beings, we are wired to work with people who understand us. We are wired with people who can see things from a point of view and practices empathy. When the understanding is there, then the productivity happens. A lot of managers talk about, I want teamwork, I want teamwork, I want my team to work. But teamwork is preceded by team understanding. So if I talk to a manager and say, Joseph, how come my team is not working together? I would ask the preceding question, Do you understand your team? Does your team members understand each other? And in order for understanding to happen, a manager cannot run far away from the emotional equation. You know, how do I know how my people are feeling? Do I know the state of their well-being?
Right. Yeah. You know, I think that's really interesting. And I think also that a lot of leaders can get caught up in a lot of the numbers and the facts and stuff like that. And they forget really to go back and connect with the people that they're working with, you know. And that really comes across, especially in Malaysia, where there's this like huge power distance problem, where there is such an inability to communicate when you are in a position of leadership as opposed to someone who isn't, like, technically, like in terms of like a hierarchy, let's say, mm-hmm. right? So really it is about kind of letting go of that sort of pride and being able to really get to the heart of what makes your employees tick and how they can work together in the best way possible.
Yeah. Mm. I mean, if you take a look at the scenario 2 to 3 decades ago, where people come to work basically just to work.
Right.
You know, and if your manager is not as authentic or not as connecting, you can put up with it. You know, you will climb the mountain called Gunung Tahan.
Mm.
You know, you kind of can tahan and bear up with it, because during 2 to 3 decades ago, good jobs are hard to find.
Right.
You know, you are basically stuck. But today's scenario, fast forwarded to today, it is very different. Why is it that most employers want to be employers of choice nowadays, wanting to win this award and that award? It's precisely because employees now have choices, mm-hmm. you see. So from that perspective, young, talented employees today, when they come to work, they don't come to work just to cari makan, just to find a living. They mm-hmm. come to work to cari makna, to find purpose, a sense of belonging and contribution. And you can't do that just by always talking about the role, the role, the role, and you forget about the soul,
right?
The S-O-U-L.
Yeah. So, you know, from what you're saying, you're kind of implying that there is a kind of generational difference in what employees expect of how their employees treat their emotions or value their emotions as well, right? So, I mean, why do you think that is? Why are we allowed to cari makna now?
I think in a sense, if you take a look at the basic needs of the workforce today, I think the basic needs of food, shelter, clothing has been met. So people basically join the workforce with more aspirational needs right now. Mm-hmm. Boss, I come to you or I join your organization not just to be receiving instructions, but you need to inspire me. You need to give me a sense of hope. I need to know where I am going. So being a manager today entails you being a coach as well.
Right.
You can't just go to your employee, here's your 10-page job description, go take a look at it and don't disturb me and go do your stuff.
Right.
But people are looking for coaching. People are looking for a sense of guidance. How can I best express my talent in this organization? Where do I find my fit?
Mm. I think there are a number of leaders in Malaysia who would listen to this and be like, oh, but like that's so, you know, that's really pandering to this kind of a snowflake, millennial, Gen Z, whatever generation, right? Like why, you know, why should I kind of get down on their level and like be, have a heart to heart? Like, you know, we just need to get work done, right? Like we just need to be productive. So what would you say to those people who are listening and they have this kind of resistance, you know, and this kind of conception of like, oh, like we don't need to deal with emotions or feelings, right? Like that's such a young person thing. What would you say to those people?
I would say that there is a timeless principle that cuts across generations as far as leadership is concerned. That timeless principle is the identification of motivation.
Right.
Across all generations, people are motivated to work. People are motivated to perform. Except that as you move from one season to another season, one generation to another generation, the wise and discerning leader is one that asks, what is it that motivates this group of people now? I'm not saying the absence of motivation, but what motivates.
Right.
So the danger happens is if I'm a 50-year-old manager and if I think what motivates me when I was 25, as I talk to someone who's 25 years old, oh boy, will there be a mismatch?
Right.
So for example, when I first became an engineer, I gave myself a 6-year runway to be a manager. Mm. I was willing to have a 6-year runway really slog it out as an engineer before I get promoted. You talk to the generation employees today.
Hi.
Okay, is 6 years good enough for you to wait? They say, no, boss, I think 2 years is what cuts it. So I think this generation, their motivation is different. Their reason for succeeding is different. Their knowledge level is different. Their runway is different. So you have got to retrofit your definition of what not just what motivates you, but what motivates the other party. So
yeah.
I think that's when the engagement happens.
I think also, you know, speaking as a member of the younger generation myself.
Yes, Christine.
I think also it's because of the kind of situations that we find ourselves in as the younger generation as well. I guess we don't hit the same kind of milestones at the same times as the previous generation
exactly.
did. Right? So that's why our expectations can be different. And that's why, you know, we are kind of... we are valuing emotions, we're valuing inspiration now because we are in a different sort of place, right? I think a lot of people, when they think about, oh, like these kids these days, but, you know, it's a different kind of level. Like someone who was 25, 20 years ago is going to be in a different place in life than someone who's 25 now, quite frankly, right? You know, with all the technology that's changed the way that we work and how society has kind of moved on as well. So I think it's important to understand that, you know, don't discount the kind of social or emotional background of the younger generation as well, you know, and use it to your advantage even.
Exactly.
You know,
exactly.
And, yeah. Okay.
Exactly.
Great. Well, we'll be taking a quick break for some music, but after that, I'll continue speaking to Joseph Tan. He is, again, the consulting director of Good Monday Consulting about losing the emotional game and defining what the emotional game actually is. So stay tuned to Enterprise on BFM 89.9 for more of that conversation.
Breakfast for Masters, BFM 89.9.
You're listening to Raise Your Game on Enterprise. I am Christine Wong, and today I'm speaking to Joseph Tan for our third and last part of this series that we're doing on how leadership is a losing game. And today we're talking about how leadership, you know, you have to lose the emotional game, right, to be a better leader. And, you know, we earlier talked about the fact that emotions are super motivating for people and kind of the generational, difference or the generational values, right, that people have with emotions. So now let's actually talk about what the emotional game is when it comes to the workplace.
Well, when it comes to the workplace, why I call it the emotional game is that sometimes managers and leaders may have that false perception or that false thinking, meaning that I must always be right. I cannot afford to be seen as a doormat. Then that would affect people's perception of my leadership. I think that's not true. What we need to do is to focus on being authentic. I think what people are looking for nowadays is authenticity. And if in the name of being authentic, you may lose a little bit of your ego along the way, and if the name in the name of being authentic, you become more of a human being, I think that's totally fine.
Yeah, it's not a bad thing to be human.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. But sometimes because like what you say, Christine, about the power distance thing, the power distance thingy, what it does is that it creates a perception. It creates an image.
Right.
And sometimes leaders feel safe behind that image. They feel that there is no need to be vulnerable. But on the other hand, if you talk about the workforce, the employees, they are looking for understanding. They are looking for someone who would walk the talk, someone who would rally the troops, someone
right.
who would manage by wandering around and
leading by example.
Yeah, and connecting with the people on the floor. And when that happens, though it might feel uncomfortable in the beginning, but the more you do it, you build that bridge of authenticity, I think, which will give you more mileage in the long run.
Definitely. I mean, you can even tell from the kind of media that we consume nowadays, like the fact that, you know, YouTube is such a huge thing, right? Because
yeah.
people really connect to a sense of authenticity.
Exactly.
People really connect to people really showing what their lives are like, what
yeah.
their passions are,
yeah.
right? And you know, I think also that when it comes to the workforce, you know, and talking about the kind of barrier and the kind of image, there's this kind of misconception that emotions hinder your performance,
mm-hmm.
You know, that you can't let your emotions get in the way of being productive,
mm-hmm.
right? So how would you address that misconception?
I think emotions get in the way when there is a sense of unfairness, emotions in and of itself, there's nothing wrong with it. It is what drives that emotions. For example, a lot of complaints that I hear from employees are complaints on favoritism.
Right.
You know, and favoritism, of course, would drive a certain level of emotions. So then again, it falls back onto the leader to be fair, consistent. And when there are negative emotions among the team members, it's always to ask the question, why? Why are people feeling the way that they are feeling? Which then would lead me to a very important authenticity skill that a manager must have.
Okay.
A manager needs to facilitate a safe environment for conversations. Not many managers can do that because they are so used to their positional authority. They want the environment to be fearful.
Mm.
They want you to approach them as if they are approaching royalty, where not one of your decree can go wrong. That is never going to work. That in itself will breed a lot of hidden emotions, which will eventually affect the workplace. So you need to create an environment where employees feel safe to open up to you.
Right.
That is an important skill.
And when you say, you know, creating an environment where you can have conversations, you know, it's not just like the kind of surface water cooler conversation, although that is important to connect with your employees.
Yeah, yeah.
But also I think it's about conversations where you can genuinely be open with one another.
Exactly.
About, you know, your performance or your productivity or what the vision of the company is, you know, stuff where I think, you know, and going back kind of briefly to our first part of the series, losing the ego game, where you can really let your ego get in the way, right? And you can really have this hurt feelings of like, oh, they don't agree with me totally, so they must not like understand what I want to do, right? Mm. And in reality, you really have to be able to let that go and let that hurt and that pride go and be able to accept what your employees can give you.
That's right. Yeah. One area that I personally struggle with, Christine, is that my propensity to pronounce judgment.
Mm.
So I think one of the practical things you can do as a leader to create a safe environment is bite your tongue. Withhold judgment. Meaning, please don't complete other people's sentences.
Oh.
When the other person speak, let them finish what they want to say. And when they finish what they want to say, always ask two follow-up questions. Number one, is there anything else? And then keep quiet again.
Mm.
And then after that, ask them, how is this affecting you?
Right.
And then keep quiet again. If you can ask these two questions successfully without giving your 2 cents worth, people will feel safe.
Yeah. And you know, I think that unfortunately in today's general kind of work environment, a lot of people will get asked those questions and feel like it's a trap, right? No, seriously, right?
Okay.
Like I think there is this kind of, because we're not used to our leaders being emotionally vulnerable with us and actually accepting our feedback honestly with, you know, no fear of repercussion.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think, you know, when you get to a point where those don't feel like trick questions anymore for the person you're asking, that's really when you've hit the jackpot, right? So, you know, again, you know, moving on from there, what else can a leader do to kind of increase their emotional intelligence?
Okay, I remember doing coaching with a particular CEO, and he's not really cut out to be emotional, but he was sincere. He wanted to create a safe environment where people are willing to talk and sometimes tell him the bad news in a truthful manner. So my suggestion to him is that what you can do is always give a preamble. Give a preamble, meaning you could start the meeting by saying, you know, guys, I'm not the emotional type, but I really do value your input. And for the next 30 minutes, I know I have been quite a jerk. I know I always complete your sentences, but I'm going to make a special effort not to talk in the next 30 minutes. And I'm just going to be asking a few questions. I would really appreciate your response. And let me just give you a preamble, tell you up front, I'm not going to label you. It's not going to be a career limiting move for you. You know, and I'm really going to listen. So if you just kind of say that, it might sound a little bit mechanical when you give a preamble, but I think people will appreciate it because that's honesty.
Yeah, like at least you're trying to set a precedent, you know, for kind of designating this environment as a safe environment to speak your mind, right? And I think it's kind of, I guess also is that kind of a fake it till you make it sort of mentality as
a
well.
A little bit of
in
that.
In a sense, right? A like bit. The more that you use a preamble and the more that you try to really sincerely believe in it as well, yeah. I think eventually you will start to be able to connect on that emotional level as well. Okay, and finally, kind of before we wrap up, just to tie the whole series together, you know, losing the ego game, losing the expectations game, losing the emotional game, you know, when it comes to all of that, how does that as a whole contribute to becoming a better leader?
I think as a whole, I think the number one enemy to your leadership is this four-letter word, S-E-L-F, self. You will find that you are your worst enemy in your quest to becoming a great leader. Because that self will crop up every now and then. I want this to go the way I feel. I want this to go according to my own ego. I want it to go according to my own expectations. And if you don't learn to subject your S-E-L-F to the bigger vision of the T-E-A-M, to the team, then you might end up leading the whole thing on your own. And leadership is never meant to be a lonely journey.
Right. You know, when we kind of name this, you know, a leadership is a losing game, right? It's not that being a leader is a losing game. It's more being able to lose that sense of self in a way, and being able to, instead of constantly thinking about what you want and what you, you know, prioritize, is really about making everything a team effort and making sure that you serve a bigger purpose than just yourself.
Exactly. All the right. world is bigger than you.
Excellent. Well, that is all the time that we have. Thank you so much, Joseph, for sharing with us, you know, over this past couple of shows, you know, about losing the leadership game and speaking to us today on Raise Your Game as well. Thank you so much for all of your thoughts.
You're welcome.
All right. Well, if you've missed any of this interview, you can head over to our app that's available on the Apple App Store and Google Play, and you can download the podcast from there. You can also check us out on our website. That's bfm.my/podcast if you're more of a desktop person. And if you're more of a mobile person, you know, check us out on Spotify because we're now on there too. For now, stay tuned to Enterprise on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.